Has your lifestyle changed in the last 2 years? Have you run up higher balances on your credit cards? You wouldn't be alone. Hi, I'm Rob West. Inflation reared its ugly head 2 years ago, causing many to dip into savings or slide into debt, both of which are unsustainable. So what's the answer? Well, maybe it's time for a budget overhaul. I'll talk about that. Then we have lots of great listener questions ahead, but we won't be taking your live calls today because this program is pre-recorded. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, there's something you need to understand about the inflation numbers you hear in the news, such as inflation fell to 3.2% last month on an annualized basis. Some folks think that means prices went down, but it really only means that the rate of price increases has gone down. So if prices increased 3.2% for the period, you must also understand that they will stay that way month after month, even if the rate of inflation continues to fall. You rarely, if ever, see prices ratchet backwards. In a nutshell, it means that if inflation were suddenly 0%, the harsh effects of the last 2 years would still be with us. It's important to understand that. Coupled with that disturbing trend is that wages have not kept pace with inflation. According to Bankrate, 60% of workers say their paychecks have fallen behind inflation over the past 12 months. That's up from 55% who said they were losing ground to inflation last year. So if prices continue to rise and your paycheck doesn't keep pace, what do you do? Well, it seems some people have been tapping into their savings to make up the difference. Some 40% of Americans have depleted savings they built up during the pandemic. Others decided to use their credit cards. The Federal Reserve reports that credit card debt rose sharply in 2023 despite soaring interest rates. Credit card balances increased nearly $50 billion in 2023 alone to reach an all-time high of just over $1 trillion. Now, savings will run out. Credit cards will be maxed out. So if you can't increase your income, you have to scale back your lifestyle. That means trimming your budget or maybe giving it a complete overhaul. Some things that would have the biggest impact on your budget take a lot of time to implement, like downsizing to a smaller house or getting rid of a car payment. So for now, we'll just look at a few things that you can do right away. First, freeze your impulse spending, and you do that by freezing your credit cards. I don't mean freeze your credit with the three credit bureaus, which, by the way, is another good idea. I'm talking about actually freezing your credit card or cards in a big chunk of ice in the freezer. That way you won't carry them around and be tempted to use them. Ah, but what about online impulse spending, you ask? A fair question. Your online accounts probably save your credit card information. So you'll have to log in and delete them from your accounts. That way, you'll have to thaw the cards out of the ice before you can use them online. Maybe the urge to spend will be gone by the time the ice melts. Now, all of that may sound silly, but it works, and we know that because studies show you save from 10 to 30% by using cash only. So take out a budgeted amount of cash to get you through the week for various spending categories. Leave your debit card at home. When the money's gone, well, you have to stop spending. Next, double up on meal prep. When you're preparing a meal, double or even triple the recipe and put the extra meals in the freezer. And now you're asking, well, that's nice, but how does that save money? Well, I'll tell you. The next time you've had a rough day, you're on the way home, and you feel too tired to make a meal, you want to hit the drive-thru to get fast food for the family. For a family of four, that could be $50 or more. But wait, you don't have to stop because those frozen dinners are waiting for you in the freezer, maybe next to your frozen credit cards. Just pop a meal in the micro and save some serious cash. Okay, here's one more way to fight inflation and get your budget back in the black. Have your spouse or a friend cut your hair. You can start watching YouTube videos showing how to do it. There are plenty of them. Buy the necessary equipment such as barber scissors and combs, maybe even an electric razor. It's worth the expense and it'll pay for itself soon enough. Many shops are now charging close to $20 for a haircut. You may want to add a tip, but if you cut your own hair, you can save almost $250 a year. So there you have it, some ways to cut back on spending today to counteract inflation. All right, your calls are next. We'll be right back.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Sometimes the hardest thing to do is the right thing to do. I'm talking about forgiveness. It's easy to hold a grudge against those who wrong you and hurt them back by withholding forgiveness. In his Sermon on the Mount, Jesus speaks to a large crowd, reminding them how much they need God's forgiveness. But then he takes it one step further. Matthew 6:14. If you forgive other people, when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. You see, forgiven people forgive. Is it easy? No. That's why we have to look to Christ to conform our hearts to be like his. You'll see Jesus more clearly through time in God's Word. Visit getanchor.com.
Hey, Greg, I need some advice.
Oh, what's up?
I'm really struggling with finding ways to cut back. With costs going up, especially in healthcare, what do you guys do?
We use CHM, Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's a health cost sharing ministry that's been sharing members' eligible medical bills for over 40 years. Sure helped us stick to our budget. And here's the website, chministries.org. chministries.org.
Thank you for listening to American Family Radio. Like many areas across the nation, here at the AFR headquarters in Tupelo, Mississippi, we're experiencing winter weather that's more severe than usual. Because of that, our shows today are pre-recorded, allowing our staff to be home safe with their families. We hope you'll find these best of broadcasts informative and encouraging. Thanks for understanding, and God bless.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
We are grateful for support from Timothy Plan. Are you unsure if your investments align with your values? Well, for nearly three decades, the goal of the Timothy Plan has been to guide clients on a biblically responsible journey with its mutual funds and ETFs. More information is available at timothyplan.com. Investing includes risk, including possible loss of principal. Before investing, carefully consider funds, investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses contained in the prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Read carefully before investing. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners, LTD, and ETFs distributed by Foresight Fund Services, LLC.
Delighted to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. Hey, as we think about applying God's wisdom to our financial decisions, you know, one of the key issues that we have to consider is that season of life in retirement. You know, the world would offer a definition, an idea of retirement that I believe really is not in line with the scriptural perspective on retirement. You know, this idea of retiring at 65 and getting a check and retiring to a life of leisure is fairly modern concept. You know, we really don't see that modeled in scripture except in a very narrow instance around the Levitical priests. God's word really does not support the idea of retirement that we would see today. So as we think about it, here's a few perhaps retirement myths that I think you need to be aware of as you consider how you approach this season of life, recognizing that, well, we all need to be honoring God's call on our life throughout the whole of our life. It doesn't have an expiration, which would mean that we would retire to something and not from something. First of all, it's this idea in terms of a retirement myth that we should never stop being a part of God's workforce. We just just change assignments as we age and our circumstances change. However, we have to still plan carefully for that time when our income may be reduced or fixed because we can no longer work. Another myth is that retirement is all about us. As believers, it's never all about us. Life, including how we live after we retire, is all about Christ and our service to Him. A third misunderstanding about retirement is that you have to accumulate as big a nest egg as possible. In fact, what's more important is to decide how much is enough and save for that and no more. And then a final retirement myth is that you can determine your future. Yes, you can make plans, but be careful not to presume, which means you say, I'll retire at such and such a date with this amount of money. My spouse and I will move here and do this or that. Well, James 4 warns against this. It says, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. Instead, we ought to say, if it's the Lord's will. You know, retirement may not be a big topic in the Bible, but we can still plan wisely for our later years. So whether you're getting ready to retire or still working and raising a family, make your plans. Be on your knees before the Lord asking Him for wisdom as we submit everything that we have for His use and for His glory as well. Hopefully that's an encouragement to you today. Let's start today in Lancaster, PA. Hi, Steve. Go ahead, sir.
How you doing? Two quick questions. I'll do the second easy one first. My wife and I, we tithe cheerfully and a little bit above, but her opinion is the tithe should go directly to the home church. And I think that if you're giving cheerfully where you see need in the ministries or wherever it might be, and you're giving in the spirit of the Lord, that that should count to your tithe. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I have an opinion, and that's all it is, because I think ultimately, Steve, and I appreciate the question, ultimately this is between you and your wife and the Lord. You know, you're right. New Testament giving is giving cheerfully. It's giving freely. I would say it's giving systematically, but also sacrificially. We see that clearly modeled when Jesus celebrated probably the most famous giver in the Bible, and that was the widow. We don't know her name. We just know she gave out of her poverty. And so I think those are the keys. This is not about checking a box or being legalistic. It really is an act of worship, an overflow of our gratitude toward the Lord for the grace that He's extended to us, starting with our salvation. And so, you know, again, I think that's between you and the Lord. Now, clearly God's plan A is the local church. And I think we see clear precedent in Scripture that we are to give to support the work of the local church. So that's why I, and this would get to, you know, where my opinion comes in, why I would start with the tithe going to the local church, and then I'd look at that as a beginning point. You know, my friend Randy Alcorn, the author, calls that the training wheels of giving. And so if we're starting with that systematic guideline of giving a tenth of our increase to the local church, then we begin to give beyond that more sacrificially as the Lord leads. That's where helping those in need comes in, you know, along our path, maybe supporting the work of a Christian ministry or charity, that type of thing. But at the end of the day, I would say it's ultimately between you and the Lord.
Okay. And then the second question is, again, a more technical question. My wife tithes religiously, pardon the pun, on her gross income from her work as a nurse. I've been self-employed for almost 40 years, and mine is many shades of gray. But on her Social Security payment into a fund, whether it's coerced or not, I've raised the point that she's paying into a fund, and when you get a Social Security payment back when you retire, you're basically getting your own money back that she's already tithed on. Do you think that that could be a proper observation of that, or is that something that should just go by the wayside?
Yeah, no, I think it's perfectly appropriate to take that approach. You know, I would say first, you pray about it and say, Lord, what would you have me to do? Second, I think there really are two approaches to this, and you've each touched on them in your different viewpoints. The one is the simple method, which just says, despite the fact that she was giving off of the gross and therefore has given on a portion of what has been paid in and now being returned to her through Social Security, the simple method says, everything I receive is a gracious gift from God. And so I'm just going to tithe on the entire Social Security check at an act of worship and thanksgiving to the Lord. There is another approach, and I think you're hitting on it, where you try to establish, in my view, and it's a little more complicated, but you'd establish a percentage that represents the portion of every benefit check that is returning what you paid in, and the percentage, the remaining amount that you're receiving beyond that, which could be considered the growth in it. And so one way to do that would be you could look at your benefit statement, which is available at mysSA.gov, and they'll show you the total amount you paid in during your working years. And then you could estimate how much you would receive back over the course of your lifetime, and you could use your life expectancy as that number, and then say, okay, if I've paid in X amount and I'm going to receive over the course of my life Y, then you could establish a percentage that says X percent is the amount that I'm returned to me, and Y percent is equivalent to essentially what is the gain. And then that portion you could tithe on it, because that would be your increase. Again, that takes a little work, but I think it would be a perfectly appropriate approach. Does that make sense, or did I lose you?
It certainly makes sense. It kind of gives me a little bit of justification for what I feel, even though we're blessed enough that I'm probably not going to do it. Neither one of us are collecting Social Security yet.
Sure.
But I was just analyzing, because that's a fund. That's what you paid into.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's exactly right. And clearly, through those FICA taxes that went in, but keep in mind, it gets even a little bit more complicated, because if she was a W-2 employee, remember, half of the FICA taxes, which includes Social Security, was paid by her employer. So she only paid half. So it does get a little complicated there when you begin to look at it. And so that's why I think this other approach of just saying, you know what, Lord, I can never outgive you, and everything I receive comes from your hand. And so I'm going to give freely and cheerfully and generously. But I certainly wouldn't minimize, Steve, your perspective on this, because you're exactly right. She has been tithing on the gross, and therefore at least a portion of what's coming back through her benefit check, she's already tithed on. Hey, God bless you, my friend. Thanks for listening to us there in Pennsylvania. We appreciate it. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Is God calling you to ministry? It's time to multiply your capacity for ministry with an affordable degree. The Bachelor of Arts in Christian Ministry at Wesley Biblical Seminary is the degree for you. When God called you to ministry, He called you to preparation. This degree is the education that you need to put all the pieces together for an amazing life of ministry. You will graduate with a confidence for ministry that is backed up by your competence in the scriptures, theology, and ministry. Come learn with a trusted seminary that will help you become a faithful leader. Learn more at wbs.edu.
What if your everyday purchases could support biblical causes? With the all-new Cash Rewards Visa card from Christian Community Credit Union, a portion of every purchase goes to ministries that spread the gospel, combat human trafficking, and protect vulnerable children. Plus, earn unlimited 1.5% cash back. Visit joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
Progressive elites in Hollywood, big tech, mainstream media, and higher academia are lying to our next generation. They want to convince our young people that America's biblical foundation is offensive, outdated, and must be overthrown. Your gift today will unleash AFA action to share the timeless truth of why protecting the biblical family is essential to the survival of the American Republic. You'll also get the free DVD and booklet set, Progressive Threat to the American Republic. Visit AFAaction.net.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Rob West of Faith and Finance.
I'd like to take a moment to ask you to consider investing in the ministry that you know as American Family Association. One way you can support AFA's efforts is through your estate planning. You can shore up permanent income for your retirement years while supporting the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit afafoundation.net.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions today on anything financial. So let's head right back to the phones to a beautiful Juneau, Alaska. Hi, Christy. Thanks for your call. Go ahead.
Thank you. You or one of your predecessors years ago talked about employing children or teenagers in a family to work in a family business.
Yeah.
And there were regulations about it, but I can't recall if the discussion was about taxes or about the minimum employment age. So anything that you could give me information about that would be helpful.
Yeah, that's great. Let me just ask, what type of family business do you have?
Oh, I don't. It's one of my kids who is a counselor, a therapist,
who wants
to employ a child.
Got it. Yeah. So the key here is you can pay children under the age of 18 for working in a family business. Though generally speaking, the wages are not subject to the usual Social Security or Medicare taxes for those children under 18, be 18 and beyond, they would be. And so this allows essentially the business to take the wages as a deduction from the taxable income without having to pay the payroll taxes, which is, you know, a great opportunity, and to, you know, allow your kids to begin building up some money as long as they're doing real work. The one opportunity you have beyond that is, you know, for instance, if you were to keep the annual wage less than or equal to the tax year's standard deduction, then the child wouldn't even need to file a tax return or owe any additional taxes. So that, you know, for 2024 is for an individual is $14,600. So, there is a great opportunity there. I think, you know, it's always wise, especially when you're doing something new and, to check with a CPA or tax preparer just to make sure you're doing it properly. But generally speaking, this is a great opportunity for you to begin to compensate the kids.
Yeah, I think this is just something like cleaning the office and some of those jobs, not counseling people.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. You're very welcome. Thanks for calling today. We appreciate it. Let's go to Minnesota. Hi, Ruby. How can I help you?
Hi. Well, thank you. You already have you and Larry Burkett and others with just telling us what the Bible has to say about faith and finances, and it has kept us from a lot of messes. But now I'm helping a relative who is in a pretty big mess. I'm distributing an inheritance. I can give them $17,000 a year. We want it to count. And so they have four car loans, over $68,000 each, over $68,000 total from what we can see. And they have other loans, not credit card debt. We would like to be able to help them out by doing something with getting them out from underneath at least one of those loans. That's 23.99%. How do we best work with them or with the car loaner to get at least something taken care of?
Yeah. Let me just ask, without getting into the details, is this just are you the executor of a will, or are you the trustee on
no
a trust?
There was no will, but the money was put in my name prior to the death because he was in the nursing home, and I was paying his bills and paying the nursing home bills. We didn't expect him to die so quickly. We thought it would be his estate would be run down fairly quickly at a nursing home, but there was some left.
Okay.
So that it was in my name, so thus it is like me gifting it to them.
Okay. Because normally you would go through the state's intestate succession laws, which just basically says if you die without a will, the court still gets involved and makes the decisions on the owner of the assets, the deceased's behalf. And generally, you know, they will distribute that to family. Now, obviously, if this money has been put in your name, you know, prior to the death, and it's really your asset, not his. And at that point, you would be just trying to honor his wishes for the gift that he made to you, which is essentially what that would have been. So you just may want to check with an estate attorney just to make sure you're handling this properly. So there's not any question down the road. But clearly, if you have money, because that's essentially the way we'll treat this here, and you're wanting to gift it to someone else, you can give up to $18,000 per person here in 2024. That's up from $17,000 last year to an individual, as many individuals as you want. And as long as you don't go above that $18,000, you don't even have to let the IRS know. At that point, it wouldn't be taxable beyond $18,000. You would just have to fill out the gift tax form, which would take away from your lifetime exemption, which is now over $13 million. So you got quite a ways before that comes into play. So I guess the question is, you're wondering, how do we make the gift and structure it in such a way where we know that it's accomplishing the purpose for which we intended, and that's to pay off debt? Is that right?
Yes, especially to get them in a position where they're not going to have to go bankrupt again.
Yeah.
So they've gone bankrupt in the past. They do not have credit cards because they're not allowed to, but they are allowed to have these car loans.
Yeah.
And they have four of them.
Yeah, got it. Well, obviously, the key here is to right, you know, the ship in terms of getting them on a healthy track financially where they're making the right decisions and not just, you know, continuing a cycle that's of poor decision making here in the finances. Obviously, if you come in and pay off one of the debts, even if you verify that it's been paid off, that's nothing going to stop them from going out and, you know, trying to get another loan or continuing to spend beyond their means. Obviously, you only have so much control. One of the keys, I think, might be getting a third party involved. We have a team of what we call certified Christian financial counselors here at FaithFi. You can find them on our website at faithfi.com/cert, C-E-R-T, C-F-C, CERT, C-F-C, and that's short for Certified Christian Financial Counselor, faithfi.com/cert, C-F-C. You'll find about a dozen, and this list is growing, but about a dozen men and women who've been trained as biblical financial counselors, and any of those could come in and work with this family member to help them set up a plan that's sustainable, start putting the right disciplines in place, and create a plan to pay off the debt. That would be the direction I would go. I've got to hit a break, Ruby. Stay on the line. We'll talk a bit more off the air. We'll be right back.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
The world around us is constantly challenging the way we think. That's why we need a constant source of information that's based on the unchanging Word of God. I'm Jeff Shambley, and I invite you to join me for The Stand Radio, a weekly program that highlights the latest trends in culture, faith, and family. You'll hear insightful interviews with a biblical worldview application. The Stand Radio, Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. soundmindinvesting.org.
Absolutely free. We know you've learned to be suspicious of those words, but really, you can get biblical financial wisdom delivered to your inbox each week absolutely free. articles, videos, podcasts, and special offers on biblical resources. Nearly 60,000 people receive our free weekly wisdom email, and you can too. Create your free FaithFi account by going to faithfi.com and click sign up to begin receiving weekly wisdom in your inbox.
The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
Because of my past health history, finding affordable health care was nearly impossible. But then I found CHM, where costs are not adjusted based on medical history. Christian Healthcare Ministries even provides the freedom to choose my own providers. And the best part? CHM members pray for me. Too good to be true? It's not. I'm a proud member of Christian Healthcare Ministries, and if you think it could be right for you, learn more at chministries.org/faithfi.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions today. Let's head right back to the phones to Paramount, Florida. Hi, Nancy. Go right ahead.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got caught up in a little thing that I wasn't sure what was happening. I was sure, but I wasn't sure how it would affect me. I have a store card, just a store card. And at some point, they, without me knowing it, they changed it to a MasterCard.
Okay.
Which is fine. We have very good credit. But while I was paying for something, the cashier said, would you like to apply for a rewards card, you'll save $50 on this purchase. Like, I just did. And I thought later on, what did I just do? What did I just do? So I'm wondering if it would hurt my credit if I closed that out.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I mean, you may see a temporary drop of maybe 10 or 20 or 30 points at the most, but this isn't an account that had a lot of history associated with it. You know, more than anything, probably what pulled your score down, and again, we're talking a minimal amount here, was just the authorization that you extended when you, you know, allowed them to open the account in your name, because they would have had to go pull your credit report to do that. So you turning around and closing it really isn't going to change anything. So I would just go ahead and do it. If you don't plan to use it, you know, these store cards are not the best, just because they tend to have very high interest rates. They're often with companies that are not considered top tier lenders. And so they just don't help you from a credit mix standpoint. And if you're not going to use it, it's just one more account to keep up with. So I wouldn't worry about it, Nancy. Are you looking to buy a car or a house or get a loan or anything in the next 6 months?
Oh, no. We're
yeah. Okay. So it really doesn't matter anyway. I mean, it's nice to know that your credit score is as high as it can be, but it really doesn't come into play for somebody in your season of life unless you're going to go out and try to qualify for a loan. And at this point, you don't have any interest in doing that. So it really doesn't matter anyway. So I would say absolutely close it. Don't look back and don't give it one more thought.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. May the Lord bless you. Thanks for calling. To Anderson, Indiana. Hi, Becky. Go ahead.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate your program.
Thank you.
So I recently received an inheritance, and so I'm interested in your thoughts about tithing from that and how taxes might figure into that.
Yeah. Well, from the tax standpoint, there really are no taxes. Any taxes that would be due would be paid by the estate prior to you receiving the inheritance. And given that, you know, estate taxes, at least in the current law, don't kick in until you get above $13 million. Most estates aren't taxable. There is no inheritance tax. So you're not going to have any tax on that money. In terms of a tithe, I love the principle of the tithe as a guideline. I like considering it as a starting point for our giving. You know, we're not under the law of Moses, so it's not about a legalistic approach. And yet we did even see a reference to the tithe before the law of Moses. So I think it's a great beginning point. The key, I think, to New Testament giving is giving freely and giving cheerfully, giving sacrificially, but using the tithe as a beginning place to say, on my increase, I'm going to give as unto the Lord, starting with my local church, I think is great. And if we apply the principle of the tithe, I would say it does apply to an inheritance because that's your increase. Everything we receive is from the Lord, whether it comes from the government as a Social Security check or our employer as wages or an inheritance. That's ultimately, it all belongs to God, and he's now entrusting it to us. So an inheritance check would absolutely be an increase. So I would follow the same kind of pattern of giving you do with anything else you would receive.
So just to clarify, the inheritance is in the form of stocks. So that's okay. Where I was wondering about the taxes part, because it right now I've received the stocks, but at some point, if I sell some of them, then how would you look at that from a tithing perspective?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, right, I wouldn't tithe on it now if you receive the stocks and you're going to continue to hold them. From a tax standpoint, what happens is you get what's called a step up in basis. So if you receive these as an inheritance, the cost basis that determines the capital gain or loss, the cost basis is stepped up to the market value of those stocks as of the date of death. So that the idea there is if you were to receive them as an inheritance and then turn around and sell them right away, you have no taxes due, no capital gains because of that step up in basis. Now, if the basis steps up, but you hold the stocks and then they continue to increase in value over time, then yeah, at that point you would have a capital gain that you would owe, either a short-term gain if you sell it within a year or a long-term gain if you sell it in more than a year. So that is something to consider. Now, in terms of the tithe, you have a couple of approaches. One is to say, well, all of this is an increase, and you know, as of the day you receive it, and so you go ahead and liquidate a portion of the portfolio to pay a tithe, and then from that point forward, you would tithe on only the gains that you had. So maybe every time you sell a stock, you'd say, okay, on this particular stock, we made X dollars, and so I'm going to tithe on the gain because you had already, you know, given the tithe on the whole thing when you received it. But that's just one approach. I mean, there's not a right or wrong answer here. It's ultimately between you and the Lord. But does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thanks for helping me think that through.
You're welcome. Yeah. So I think that the big idea here is to break up you receiving this increase at the point of inheritance and you saying, okay, the full amount of this portfolio is my increase, and so I want to give a tithe. And then from that point forward, you've already tithed on that money. Think of it like money you would have received as income that you would have tithed on. And then now you're deciding to invest it, although you're just keeping the same stocks. And then at that point, from that point forward, we're just looking at gains or losses. And then you could look at that maybe on an annual basis total. And this is a good tax time is a good time to do it because you got to calculate gains and losses anyway for the year. And so you could total up all the gains, subtract all the losses, and if you have a positive number, then you go ahead and tithe from that point forward. So I know we're getting a little technical here, but I hope that helps you, Becky. Clearly, you want to honor the Lord with this, and I'm wanting to help you do that. So thanks for calling today. We appreciate it very much. Let's see. We're going to head to another break here in just a moment. So Jane will be coming your way after the break. Charles in Indiana, as well as Kathy in Cleveland. Hey, let me mention, as we start a new year, often we're thinking about how we can position ourselves well for the new year. And this week I've been sharing a couple of ideas on some financial moves you can make for 2024. Here's one to consider. What about starting a monthly money date with your spouse? Now, this would be a time to review your spending plan, update your goals, make course corrections, not finger pointing. This is a chance for you all to get on the same page financially. And if you have a budget, especially let's say you're using the FaithFi app, you could go in there and say, hey, we're out of money, in our eating out. It's 2 weeks into the month. What are we going to do? now all of a sudden we can talk about a plan to course correct and make some changes, and maybe we're eating at home for the rest of the month, the next 2 weeks, you know, whatever it is. Well, that happens, I think, most effectively when we're coming together, communicating, planning, working together to manage God's money. It could be a game changer in your marriage. Consider starting that this month. Let me remind you, our team is away from the studios today, so don't call in, but we have lined up some great questions in advance. So when we come back, we'll dive into those as we apply God's wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. More calls just around the corner on Faith and Finance. Stick around.
Every weekday, strengthen your family and your faith with Family Talk.
I had the same brain when I was at the bottom of the class that I had at the top of the class. Exactly the same brain, but a different attitude. What does that tell us about our responsibility to develop the intellect of the people and our spheres of influence?
Don't miss Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson every weekday at 6:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m. Central on AFR.
Alistair Begg begins a topical study that examines the Bible's explanation and remedy for the various trials we face in this world. This week, we'll take a look at the common experiences of stress, loneliness, despair, feeling overwhelmed. Join us on Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at afr.net.
If you enjoy this radio program, you're going to love all of the many different resources waiting for you at faithfi.com. You'll find more powerful wisdom, podcasts, articles, videos, and more from partners like the National Christian Foundation, Sound Mind Investing, and Christian Healthcare Ministries. Connect with the community of thousands of Christians striving to be good and faithful stewards, and check out all of the free biblical financial advice at faithfi.com.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Our team is away today, so don't call in, but we lined up some great questions in advance, and we'll be going to those here in just a moment. Let me also remind you that the advice that I give each day on this program is general in nature. We offer principles and ideas that apply at a high level. They are not personalized, so that's why you should always seek professional financial advice. And if you'd like to find a professional who shares your values, we, of course, here at Faith and Finance Live recommend the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation. These are men and women who've met high standards, and they've been trained to bring a biblical worldview of financial decision-making. You can find one at faithfi.com. All right, we're going to go back to the phones here in our final segment. Let's get to as many questions as we can. To Chicago. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Hi, Rob. This is Jane, of course. I was calling because I have the I paid into the deferred comp 457 plan.
Okay.
And I've been hearing a lot about this digital currency, and I'm concerned that it will replace the dollar. I've been retired now since 2016, but I haven't made any withdrawals from my current plan. And I was wondering, how can I protect my money?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Jane. You know, there's a lot of talk about the digital currency. I think there's a lot of reason to be concerned if that were to ever come to pass, just because of the loss of privacy that it would entail and the potential for even social controls like we see in a few other countries. Here's the thing, though. It's a long way off. It's going to have to go through Congress, and they can't seem to agree on anything. If it does happen someday, you know, based on what we're seeing and reading, it would not replace our currency. It would only supplement it. So it would offer a digital option And the idea would be that it would be to keep us competitive here in the United States because of the dollar. A digital dollar would be very attractive around the world, but that the actual legal tender of the physical currency would not go away. But again, there's a lot of reason why I think a lot of lawmakers and including some of the states that have gotten ahead of this, like Florida, has said that the central bank digital currency would not conform with their uniform commercial code. So they're trying to kind of make a statement out in front of this thing. But bottom line is it's a long way off. I think you were smart to put that money into your 457. You got the tax deferred growth along the way. So I wouldn't do anything different than you're doing right now in terms of protecting your money. I'd probably, if you've separated from employment, I'd look at rolling that out to an IRA and leave it invested. That's going to be the very best way for you to offset the effects of inflation and grow this appropriately for your age and risk tolerance. So you're going to want to get, you know, more conservative over time. And I'd recommend, if you haven't to this point, and I can see why you wouldn't have with a 457, it's kind of hands off. You know, once you roll it to an IRA, you probably want to interview and ultimately hire a financial advisor to manage this for you. But I wouldn't make any changes in light of a possible digital currency down the road.
Oh, okay. Because I've been hearing quite a bit of information out there, and I just didn't know. Thank you so much. I'll call back at another time, Bob, if I have any questions. Thank you so very much.
Please,
God bless you.
Please do, Jane. Thank you, and Lord bless you as well. To Noblesville, Indiana. Hi, Charles. How can I help?
Thank you, Rob, for taking my call. I have a grandson that I want to get a car for when he gets to be 18. And I was wondering, should I put the funds now in a CD or a USI bond?
Yeah, it's a good question, Charles. You're a generous grandfather. I love what you're thinking here. How old is your grandson today?
15.
Okay, so we're only talking 3 years, huh?
Yeah, 3 years.
Okay. Yeah, I think a CD is your best option. You know, that I-bond rate, given that the Federal Reserve is so laser-focused on bringing inflation down, that I-bond rate is going to continue to fall, whereas CDs are fairly attractive right now, especially on a three-year CD. So as long as you don't think there's a need, you know, to have access to the money in less than 3 years, I'd probably head to bankrate.com and look for who has the best 3-year CD rates right now and lock that in, get as much as you can on that money for the next 36 months, and then you'll be ready to go. It's guaranteed as long as you have an FDIC-insured bank or credit union, and you'll have the money to be able to gift to your grandson at that point.
Thank you, Rob. You know, you've really been a blessing.
Well, thank you. That's very kind, Charles. We appreciate you calling today. Let's go to Cleveland. Hi, Kathy. How can I help you?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. Back in 2015, when my dad passed away, my mother moved in with me. And that was kind of always the plan in the back of our heads. So she's been with me all that time now, and I'm our primary caregiver as she's aging and her health is really taking a turn. And one thing that we did when she moved in at some point was put my name on her checking and savings account. And then as she lived with me, occasionally we'd buy a CD, you know, or do an I-bond, something like that. But we've never really touched that fund. And it's the money that she got from selling her condo when she moved in with me. So it's just continued to grow. And we've primarily lived off my income, which we were able to do. And her thought was, you're taking care of me. Once I'm gone, it's yours. But I just wanted to make sure there's no legal issues with that.
Yeah. Does she have a will, Kathy?
No. She's thinking in her mind, since I put your name on my account, I don't need one.
Yeah. The problem is that you're joint owners. So you're co-owners of this money. Which means that you'd be entitled to 50% of it when she passes away. The other 50% would be a part of her estate. And without a will, she would die intestate, which means that the court would decide who gets it. Now, they're going to favor family members. And if you're the only, you know, child, is that the case?
No, it's not.
Okay. Then
but
it would
she's already
like...
given money to my brother. So she, okay. She made a gift of money to him twice, right, over the past years.
Right.
So that
In her mind, she thinks she's good.
Yeah, but the challenge is it's not going to be up to her because she'd be gone at that point, and the court would be the one determining who receives that money, and they're going to divide it equally in all likelihood. So what I would do is she could either gift the whole amount to you, and then she, if it's over $18,000, which obviously it is because you have the proceeds of a home sale in here, then she'd have to file a gift tax return with the IRS. There's no taxes due, but she'd have to report it because it would take away from her lifetime gift exemption of $13 million, which is probably not quite that much. Or she could go and get a will, which is probably not a bad idea anyway, because then again, it tells the court exactly how she wants everything distributed. And I realize there might not be much there, but maybe there are some personal effects and things like that. And, you know, that would just save the hassle of having to rely on the court to make those decisions. So she would get a will, establish her wishes that she wants everything left to you, make you the executor, and then you would, handle that process at her death, which, given her situation, would be fairly simple. But apart from that, it's, you know, the portion that she owns, which if you're joint owner, she owns 50% of these accounts, that would be up to the court to decide how it's distributed.
Okay, gotcha. All right, that makes sense. Thank you very much.
Okay, Kathy, thanks for your call today. We appreciate it. By the way, if you want to find a godly estate attorney there in Cleveland, just go to our website, faithfi.com, click Find a CKA, and any of those certified kingdom advisors could help you find a godly estate attorney. And while you're there dealing with this issue of the will and just making sure everything is in order, it's probably good to make sure you have a healthcare surrogate, so you can make healthcare decisions, a power of attorney, so you can make legal and financial decisions, and even a living will that establishes her wishes around end-of-life decisions. So all of that could be handled at the same time, and you'll be glad you'll have all of those in place. Thanks for your call. Let's go down to Florida. Hi, Brian. It looks like you'll be our final caller. Go ahead.
Hello. My mortgage, I only owe like $75,000. I got a home equity because I let a timeshare tell me how great it was, so I bought one, and then the interest was really high, so I got a home equity loan to pay for. I thought I was doing the right thing, but it's adjustable, and it went way up, and I didn't know this until a couple months ago. Like $20 is going toward the principal on that.
That's it.
Right. That's my $260 payment, you know.
Lovely.
So I was wondering if I should, because my mortgage is only 3.5. I only owe 75. I didn't know if I should get another mortgage and combine them, or.
Well, you probably have a low rate though on that 75,000, right?
Yeah, it's only 3.5.
Yeah, no, you're not going to want to touch that. Unfortunately, I probably wouldn't do anything right now other than just try to pay as much as you can over the monthly payment to the home equity line of credit. The good news is rates are going to start coming down, although it won't happen quick. I mean, let's say, this rate is in the fives by the end of next year. We probably won't see the fours until the year following, but at least it's coming down. But I wouldn't, the cost of refinancing that mortgage on top of the fact that you'd be letting go of that great rate just makes that, you'd want to take that off the table immediately. A second mortgage fixed at these rates is not going to be attractive to you. So I'd probably just stick with it while ride the rates down. And in the meantime, let's eliminate any unnecessary spending so you can apply as much as possible toward, principal on that $30,000 every month.
And I owe about $11,000 on my vehicle. And I was wondering if I could double up on that and pay that off as quick as I could. Then that way I can pay a lot more on the...
Yeah, on that's probably not a bad idea because that rate's probably not great either. Is that one in the sixes or sevens?
It's like five.
Okay. So. Yeah, I like that because as soon as you pay that off, you get that full payment that you can redirect toward the home equity loan, so line of credit. Very good, Brian. Well, I think that's a great plan. We appreciate your call today. And folks, we're out of time. Faith and Finance, I want to say thanks to Devin Patrick, Robert Youngblood, and Jim Henry. Couldn't do it without them. Have a great rest of your day. Come back and join us tomorrow. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.